And welcome to AFL Roundhouse. This is the May 2010 edition of the weekly podcast where we get fans and the like from around the Arena Football League in North America. Only two esteemed guests with us this week. JP is on assignment, and he cannot join us. We happen to have our first, I guess we'd say our real first league guy with us here at the on one of our ArenaFan.com podcasts. We have the voice of the Tampa Bay Storm, Mr. Jason Dixon. How are you doing, Jason?
I am doing great, man. Thanks for having me, and thanks for all the good work you guys at Arena Fan do.
And on the other end, we also happen to have a very well-known name. It was especially within the AF2, the former AF2 world, still making a name for himself on the boards. He's trying to stay out of trouble. Yes, it's Mr. Sterling Mailpig Jackson.
Well, I know that you're honored to have me on this program tonight, and that since you asked me, I felt I was obligated to come upon this level. A little bit lower than what I'm used to, but hey, I'm here and happy to be here.
Great, fantastic. Happy to have you guys. It's hard to believe we're about midway point in the first, whatever you want to call it. We don't want to really rehash it, whether you call it AF2 2.0. To me, I'm just now a reboot league. But there are some interesting things that have occurred that have never, we could say that has occurred before, previous to AFL and stuff like that, and we're going to bring it up. Something happened, it doesn't happen as much, but it happens to be a mid-season firing. And I know, Jason, you were the one who wanted to bring this up a little bit and talk about this, and obviously chime in as see fit, Sterling, and I'll do the same, but a very big name within the Arena Football League circle was fired. I've talked about this a little bit. Now, is it a matter of that? Was it the team? Was it the players? Was it anything in particular? I think, you know, I didn't really see the writing on the wall once they changed GMs and Gene Nudo came over. It didn't even occur to me that there was going to be a possible change at the head coaching level. But what's your view?
Well, I mean, I think really what sort of set the wheels in motion, or maybe it really was the last straw, was at the end of the game the other night. Ingold sort of had it out on the sidelines and on the field in front of the fans with a couple of his players being one of them. And then in the post-game press conference proceeded to just kind of throw his players under the bus. And Woody Kern, who I'm very familiar with, the former owner of the Tampa Bay Storm, just, you know, isn't the guy to put up with that. It was a legit disappointment. I mean, Woody Kern actually was in order to bring in Ingold at the beginning of the season, and the 1-5 start coupled with, you know, struggles in, you know, ticket sales and things like that, and then what was basically an embarrassment in front of the fans that he did have, you know, led to the firing. But I think the bigger picture here is that these owners, you know, realize that the brand, that firing a head coach in the middle of the season is a pretty drastic move, and one that there's enough on the line with this relaunch of the Arena Football League that it's worth pulling the trigger on something like that to hopefully gain some good graces with the fans of your team.
Well, when you have a team that starts off at a 1-4 stacked on paper, and that's the problem, the team is stacked to paper, you have Shane Stafford go down, somebody's going to get the axe. I mean, it occurred often. I mean, it didn't occur that often in the AFL, but you have had coaches who have been fired mid-season, and it's worked out for them. I mean, Sterling, I mean, what's your take on this? I mean, it's... Any particular reason that you...
First of all, Well, I've had a long storied career with Rich Ingold. It started off in Boise City when he threatened to punch one of our friends in the face at the Boise City at the hotel for the Arena Cup. And the first thing he did was after threatening to punch the fan in the face, as he called him Jerry, said that we were harassing him. So, of course, you know, over the next 2 years, we kept harassing him. We were showing pictures of his DUI in the arenas, because since he's only had four of them.
Nice.
And then we went to Dallas. We all knew, and like I said, I have to go from the AF2 circles. We knew it was going to be a mistake. I mean, now that the cat's out of the bag, there's three players he lied to that they said he was going to make a marketing player. And then he changed it the last minute. I mean, I don't know how many of y'all, week two of the season, one of the players punched him and gave him a black eye because they were disagreeing with him. And actually, like I said, this last Saturday's game, one of the things that happened was during the pregame prayer, the players are in the pregame prayer, Engel walked in to the players and says, "You all want to be praying because you're playing so effing bad. It's disgraceful against God."
Let me ask you something.
He was doing all sorts of stuff, and most of
you said he lied to three players saying that they could get the marketing player tag, whatever you call it. I mean, and I'm not obviously not defending Engel, but don't those players have to know there's only seven to begin with? You know, it's not
well.
That
yeah,
difficult
they
to
knew
math
that, but they said the, you know. But Engel brought him in saying that they will be that franchise player or the marketing player. And then when they get to camp and they find out they're not going to be, they took off. I guess, and that's what's part of what happened was players lost their faith in their coach. And you don't cuss at players. And you all have been around these players long enough to know they're very religious players. And when they're in the middle of a group player and you call at them with the F word, you lost the respect. And Engel never accepted responsibility for what he was doing with these players. As we all saw in the last, you know, in the press conference after the game, that he was a competitive guy and the players weren't being competitive. So it wasn't a shock at all.
No,
for me, anyway.
Well, it's giant. I think once you lose once the players lose the respect for the head coach that you have on your staff, I will agree with you, Sterling. It's you're not going to be able to do anything. And I'll use an example. I know you don't, guys, and I do this, I think, way too often, but it's a very good example to use, is that if I were to use the example of Mark Trestman here in Montreal, he's, you know, being the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes, past 2 years that he has been the head coach for the team, the players have actually said he was one of the best coaches that they have ever played for. And this is coming from players who have been with everybody from, you know, all the different head coaches that they played for. So it's true. You respect breeds. I don't want to say necessarily breeds winners, but it breeds better players.
I think there's a fine line. Players don't have to like the head coach. They do have to respect them, and that's a big thing. There's been plenty of players that have come through Tampa that haven't seen eye to eye with Tim Markham. But when you look at Tim Markham's hands and he's got all that bling on his fingers, all right, you know, the guy knows what he's doing. I'm gonna, you know, do things his way and try it out. But the second you lose that respect and belief that the guy, you know, maybe doesn't know what he's doing, I think that's when things can go south in a hurry.
And it's bling, whether it be the cubic zirconia type or the actual diamond type, right, Jason?
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I will say one thing about that. I've got a ring from 2003. I've never once taken it to a jeweler. I could care less what those shiny stones that are in that thing, man. All I know is I was lucky enough to be involved in a small part of a championship team, and that's all that matters to me.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, while we're on the subject of coaches, one guy, I feel bad a little bit calling him out, but the guy in Bossier, John Norris, has made decisions. You talk to coaches, and they say, look, we don't win games. The players win games. But a coach can lose you a game. And John Norris has made some decisions the past handful of weeks, past few weeks, that have directly resulted in losses for his team. The game in Oklahoma City, His club had not converted on 7 PAT attempts. All right, they've got a 4-point lead with whatever a handful of seconds left, 15 seconds left,
yeah.
And try a short field goal, miss it, it gets returned for a touchdown, they lose
by one of the best returners in league history.
They play Tampa Bay, they have the lead.
I know that game cost about $520.
It's all about the Benjamin
Sterling.
They have the lead, and Norris just blows the strategy, using up his timeouts and allowed basically Markham to run out last week. He chose not to dress as starting or a backup quarterback, and Philly all gets hurt on the first series, and they go out and get trounced. You know, talk about guys that should be on the hot seat. John Norris and Bozier is definitely one of them.
Looking at the previous history, when you come to midseason changes, though, I will admit, and I made this point in the AFL Tonight podcast, which, by the way, is currently available to listen to if you haven't listened to yet. God, what a cheap plug. Oh, I'm an idiot. see, it's very funny. Listen to this, guys. The gentleman who took over for Michael Trigg in 2005, that was the last time that we had a change in midseason, when Trigg was the head coach for the Philadelphia Soul, happened to be a Mr. James Fuller, which happens to be Vigilante's new interim head coach.
Well, he's got experience.
Yeah, but sometimes you can't really go with records, but yeah. James finished the year at 4-7 with the Soul, even with Graziani as his quarterback.
Well, and this year he's been Dallas. I mean, they got put in a hole real early with Stafford going down. I mean, that Shane Stafford was plan A, and I don't care who's coaching that team. They're going to struggle to win games for the rest of the year.
Exactly. I mean, it's occurred before. You've had coaches who have been summarily taken out during the midseason. I mean, you don't hear that often. You've had teams that have gone over in the season, and they haven't gotten canned.
That's because I think, you know, in arena football, yeah, everybody's about winning championships, but it's more about the show. If they're losing games, but enough people are showing up to watch them lose, it's maybe not as much of a concern. In the case of Dallas, they don't have the Desperados logo. They're trying to build a new brand with the Dallas Vigilantes, and coming out of the gate losing and really an embarrassing, you know, act on the sidelines by the head coach may have forced Woody's hand a little bit. If Dallas was 1-5, but they were drawing, you know, 10,000 a game, and everybody was happy to be seeing arena football, maybe you don't make the move with the head coach in the middle of the season.
Now, the problem is, though, in Dallas, if football doesn't include JJ, then that's why they're drawing less than 5K a game.
Oh, no doubt.
So, so, yeah, I mean, it happens. You know, you were talking about gelling and stuff like that and having, you know, respect for head coaches. I don't see how it was done back in 04, and this is just another example. Carolina Cobras back in 04 had 3 head coaches within one season span. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that. So. That's actually not naming.
Because originally they wanted Ben Bennett to be the head coach.
That's true. In Dallas, yes.
And then, yeah, they wanted Ben Bennett in, and then the Lazzies down here in Fort Myers said, no, you cannot go to Carolina. Because the main plan was he's going to be the main head coach, and him and the ownership had the agreement that it's going to be a working season to work on building the talents up.
Hmm.
And that's what Ben was telling me at the time.
Oh, the choices the owners make and then they regret in the end, right?
Yeah, well, it's a roll of
dice. And also, John Norris.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Sterling.
Yeah, here's the thing. John Norris will not be fired in Bozier. I'll tell you that right now. And that's just because of the guaranteed contract. Even if you're fired midseason, the team is still responsible through the league office to pay that player or pay that coach the whole season. So unless it's like a drastic measure, like with Ingold ticking off the players, you know, playing his ego, where there's just no choice, he had to go. You're not going to see very many coaches go mid-season just because of the the way this structure is with the league.
Yeah.
Under the rules of the single entity. Because now that, you know, with Fuller, he's going to be promoted up with a new contract. And it's just an extra expense for these teams.
Now, if he actually keeps...
And that's why you're not going to see Norris go. Pardon?
And it's actually if he keeps the tag, too. I would imagine for Fuller, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to lose the interim tag unless he... Unless Kern wants to keep him, obviously he'll reevaluate at the end of the year. You know, we all know the same spiel. It happens all the time when you have an interim coach come in, and we'll see how he does. You know, from now he is. You know, they always say he is our head coach. I have faith in my head coach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Playing the media as they normally do, and Jason, I'm sure you know about that.
Yeah, well aware.
So,
yeah, I agree, too, that John Norris probably isn't going anywhere. And from what I understand, he's got a great relationship with the owner down there, too. So he's probably not going anywhere. But, you know, that's just one to look out for when you can point to the coach and say, boy, he lost us. The coach lost us three games.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty tough pill to swallow.
No, it's true. And they started off so well. But now with, you know, just as we saw before we started taping the show, that with Raymond Filiaw going on IR for Bozier, Bozier could be done.
Yeah, and I was there 2 weeks ago, and they didn't look all that impressive when they were at full strength. And that's one of the things about this league. You lose your starting quarterback in the 2010 version of the Arena Football League, and you've got an uphill battle no matter what team it is. If, you know, Jacksonville's the best team in the league right now, their starter goes down, they're just another team.
Yeah, true. And I think it's sort of a disadvantage, too. You know, I would think that maybe the league will look at a such thing where if you do have somebody who is one of your marketing players, that you, if they do happen to go down and put on the IR, which I wouldn't fathom a guess that Filiaw would be one of the marketing players, but
yeah, I think so.
That you would have some sort of rules in place where you can actually sign another marketing player, maybe at half the value or whatever, you know. But from what I've heard, you have marketing players, you have assigned your two. Once you've done that, no matter what happens to them, they stay your marketing players. Anybody else that you hire, you officially will be playing for $400.
Now that's the rule. You get three. Right. Yeah. You get three of them. Yeah.
So.
And one of the things I was just talking before the show here was, they wanted and Bozier. They tried to get hold of Clint Dozell to come down to help out this year. You know, to finish up the full time quarterback. But since he's coaching in one of the ankle biters, they were told no, he cannot come in and be the quarterback in Bozier to finish out the season. Because, you know, with the rules that the AFL has with the ankle biters.
Is Clint Dozell, though, going to, you know, move from Texas to Bozier for half the year for $400?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's going to be for $400. Yeah, right. It's not all better than that. But yeah, no, yeah, but Clint wanted to. And I talked to Clint.
I don't want to say anything.
Okay, why don't you say something? We lost it there. Okay, we know what? Well,
we started getting in an area where I probably shouldn't
partake.
Well, as far as I know, everybody makes $400.
Yeah, there's...
You just do what Adam did. Just don't say a word and just say, I just can't comment, you know?
Yeah. I
comment from Jerry Bob.
Go ahead, Sterling.
Go ahead, Sterling.
And this is a comment that Jerry has said over the last 10 years is, do the owners cheat? And he goes, what does a bear do in the woods? And we all know what the bear does in the woods. So, yes, we all know that there is still cheating. There is still payments on the player, you know, with the players underneath the table. There's no –
I no doubt in my mind
it happens. You know, like Spokane did here.
Some of the things, you know, and again, I can't speak too much on this subject, but some of the things that I don't like about the way that things are set up, some of the, you know, if a guy travels, let's say, from California to play for Tampa Bay, and for whatever reason the guy's on the roster and gets cut, the team can't even pay for a bus ticket back to California, you know, for the guy. You know, that's one of those salary cap things. As a guy, I consider myself kind of a player's guy.
Yeah.
I wish that there was a way where above board you can say, you know, here's a couple $100, fly yourself back home to, you know, after your time here is done. That kind of stuff, just, you know, you got to treat your players. I think at least the guys that came out, treat them a little bit. The rules, a guy comes from California to come play for the Tampa Bay Storm or you name the team, and he gets released, you're not even allowed to you know, give him $10 for cab fare. Get him to the airport, much less buy his airplane ticket home.
Congratulations, you caught that winning touchdown. Sorry, you got to thumb it. That type of thing, yeah.
No, absolutely. That is one of the weaker rules that the league has, but...
Maybe, you know, maybe things will improve. You never know. You know, if more money, more investors, blah, 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 you know, we can talk about it. Just depends on what rules that the, do they have a competition committee? I don't even know if they have a competition committee anymore. That they can decide, you know, if the COO decides, you know what, we need to add some more money into the pot. Let's try to figure it out. Who knows? Well, unfortunately, guys, we're going to have to wait till the, wait till we actually hear something that they deem tangible. So,
It'll be interesting to see on a lot of fronts when they get together after the season's over and evaluate how this year number one went, where, you know, what needs to be tweaked and changed and all that stuff.
Exactly. I know, Sterling, you had mentioned before you want something you want to bring up. Now, a lot of people – okay, everybody knows that the C. David Baker era is done and over with. You know, it's now Jerry's league. But I think you wanted to bring us – you know, you wanted to pull one of those lost flashback type of things, and you wanted to bring us back to the past. Let us know about the C. David Baker that we may not have known about, or in particularly how – I think it's how he became commissioner. Is that right?
Exactly. And a lot of people don't know this story. And I've been able to hear this from two different owners at the time in the owner meetings. Many years ago, I mean, I'm sure you all know that Mr. C. David Baker was an owner, was part of the ownership group of the Anaheim Piranhas. You know, one of those one-year teams.
Yeah.
What happened was at the owner's meeting they had when he was part of it, and they were knowing that the Piranhas were not doing very well. The AFL owners at the time were like saying, okay, we need a new commissioner. None of the owners wanted to step up and be commissioner. So a few of them left the board meeting, went off, had a drink or two, and it says, who is the stooge that we need to be commissioner? And so what happened was they went back in for a vote, and it was almost near unanimous vote that Baker became commissioner. Baker never did actually try to apply for the job. It was just given to him because nobody else wanted it. And then
yeah,
we all see
that's
you know,
the story.
What Baker has done since.
This is the story I heard as well. You know, it was basically handed to him. And unfortunately, what happened, you know, during the David Baker reign is he was such a good salesman. He got some pretty powerful people to buy into his way of doing things, and there was a, I guess what you could call a vocal minority, who towards the end was just yelling and screaming about, guys, we're leading ourselves down a tough path here, and Baker and his group decided to keep going down that one track, and you saw where it ended up putting the league.
That's right, yeah.
You know, that he,
Yeah, the Baker period, we all saw, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you do have to give the guy.
Big period.
you have to give the guy a little bit of credit for, you know, at least, if anything, the vision or the thought of growing the league to what it is. And the league did make steps under his reign. It just got, this is the last couple of years, just got a little crazy. I think once, you know, I'm a little bit of an arena football purist, and I think once that Iron Man thing went away, that put the league, kind of sent it down the point of no return as far as trying to move away from a league of the people, a small AAA league that, you know, was tight with its fans, to trying to strive for the big time. And it turns out the market just wasn't there for it.
And that's, you know, that was old AFG purists at the time. What we were seeing was two things. Number one is the expansion fees for AF2 teams. Half went to the AF, went to the AFL. And because of the AF2 expansion, over $40 million went from the AF2 to AFL. And this is also, I mean, listen, this is also during the time when the economy was doing great and just like nobody could hung during Baker's growth. And that's how a lot of us in the AF2 were perceiving it at the time as well. And what happened was the last year that we had in the AF2, when there was no expansion, we looked at it as this is the year it's going to fall apart, because the AFL was not going to be able to take any more money from the AF2 to support the AFL. And that's where you see a lot of AF2 people in the past were having such a gripe with the AFL. It wasn't about, you know, the teams and all that. It was about the fact that the AFL was taking so much money from the AF2 to keep the operation.
So basically the AFL was taking, it was biting the hand that feeds it. I guess we could say they're taking the money. And then the dog died, so to speak. They didn't, you know, no expansion. And well, that's a very bad analogy. But,
but that's how we, yeah, that's what we were seeing. And the fact was the AFL also at the time, they had total access to the bank accounts in the AF2. So when the AFL was running short, they would just take money straight from the bank accounts of the AF2.
Well,
they were running short.
I don't know about all that. I do know that just in from the outside looking in, from the new version of the Arena Football League, it appears that some AF2 owners do carry a little bit of a chip on their shoulder regarding that, and are running the league, probably too strong a statement, but sort of a my way or the highway kind of thing. Like, you know, I don't care how they did it in the AFL. This is how we did it in AF2, and it worked. Some things about that good, some things not so good, but I definitely have the feeling that there's a few AF2 owners that do carry a bit of a chip on their shoulder.
Well, Jason, there aren't that many AF2 owners remaining, so
well,
and you know they all seem to own they all own multiple teams. So I've always thought that
Jason's, you know,
go ahead, Sterling.
No, Jason's absolutely right. There are AF2 owners on the shoulders, like, you know what? Because, you know, they're like, and the belief was, you know, our system worked. We have 7 people in our office compared to 58 people. And it's like, you know what, our way is going to work. And it is, a lot of them is my way or the highway. And that's where a lot of the old AFL owners decide, you know, screw this. We're not going to play with your rules.
It just,
and that's what caused such a division.
It just doesn't make any sense, considering that's the way the rules used to be. You go back to the beginning, you know, regional players, you know, mind you, Foster technically was running everything, but that's the way that the league was. That's, I think, why Jerry and all wanted to get back to the way that it was now, the way that it is now, because you have control, supposed control over cost, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We start getting big heads again, we're just going to go down that same exact path that we did before, and there may not be technically AF2 teams to fall back on. We don't want to lose the league again.
One of the things, though, you know, my philosophy on this is, yeah, be be AF2 behind the scenes where the fans don't see it. No doubt about it. I agree. And I don't mean that as an insult to AF2. Be AF to be run things efficiently and you know, cost effective behind the scenes. But the show you put on to the fans out front needs to be AF1 caliber or Arena Football League caliber circa 2008 or whatever you want to call it. The show itself needs to be top notch. The stuff you do, you know, behind the scenes, no doubt about it. Do what you can to contain costs, but I think sort of that line gets crossed a little bit in this latest version of AF2 or Arena Football League.
I mean, who would have known what the league would have been like if I call it a coup? If we have not received, and I'm not saying landed the contract or whatever, gotten onto the NFL Network. You know, just been Nifty's fine. You know, nothing against Nifty. I love Nifty because you're able to watch markets, games outside of your market, and you have some great, you know, when the games are shown locally, you have some great production values. But there's certain things that, you know, you look at, what happened if we didn't have these certain things, what would the league be doing about, you know, be doing now? And I guess we could, unless you guys want to add anything else, we could sort of segue this into what I wanted to do was to talk about, you know, basically it's the midseason report card for Commissioner Kurz. So, you know, basically it's the Kurz report. And Sterling, we'll start with you. I know you started the last thing about Baker, but, you know, it seems fitting. We're going from one commissioner to the next. If you were, you know, halfway through the season, Commissioner Kurz is doing a lot of stuff that Commissioner Baker never, ever did. You would never see him do a Q&A, a weekly Q&A session on a website. He seems to be trying to be the commissioner of everybody, you know, the fans, the teams. He's trying to be a mediary, so to speak, I guess we can say. But for you, Sterling, if you were to, you know, give him a grade in any particular thing, no matter what it is, bring it up, what would you give Jerry?
Well, you know, Jerry program. I don't know if you can do that or not. No, he will listen. I would give him a B minus.
Any strengths? Any strengths or anything? Any negatives that you would point out in particular?
The first strength is that he's got these teams together. And he's got them working for the common goal to make a better product based on the budget limitations of what he has. That's the first. You know, the second string, of course, is the fact accessible to the fan. You know, you can email him; he will email you back. It might take him a day or two at times.
Yep.
If you give him your phone number, he will call you back. That's another thing. The weaknesses is that he did not have the foresight. First of all, and he didn't have the foresight for the website, and how bad that website, the Arena Football website, is. It's getting that. Tad better. He did not have enough people. I mean, Sarah Gomez, the CFO, I love her dearly. Ron Armour is a great guy. But they hired a bunch of people, you know, with the underlings, the main workers, who are just not competent enough yet to make this happen. I think I give them kudos for the NFL Network. I think that's a great network. They got a great deal for cost conscious. And yes, but like I said, the biggest weakness, of course, is the website. Biggest weakness is the stats program, but he's already addressed it, that the stats program that they have is going to be gone at the end of the year.
Exactly.
But he's not going to spend the money. He's not going to spend the money to put up a new stats program mid-season. Well, he's stuck with the contract that he has. Because that's just an extra increase to the ownership and, you know, an internal increase to the fans' price. Or try to sell extra merchandise.
No, they got to get that. They got to get
and
that store
also
up
not
running,
done.
Sterling.
Oh God, yes, that's a joke, and that's another story. But that's another. He and I have gone about that, and he's. I can see right now he's not happy with that part. But then he is limited financially. You know, kicking the guy's ass into gear, for lack of a better phrase, to get that store running. I mean, so that's why I give him a B minus at this point. He's taking the leadership and he's trying to do what he can and to make things happen. And it's taken over in a lot of ways, but yet there's still so many little things that still have to be done. So that's why I give.
What about you, Jason? If you were to give, him a particular grade, you know, this far into the season. Now, obviously, it may change for both all three of us when it comes to the end of the season. But how do you see Commissioner Kurz?
I give him the same grade I give the entire league, an incomplete. I give the league a mulligan this year. I mean, what Commissioner Kurz did and you know, the ownership group to get this thing back going, I think was a Herculean effort, and they get all the credit in the world for doing that. To pull off the NFL Network deal was huge, I think. You know, that's where they get to just make the thing happen. It was an incredible feat. The side of the business I deal with the most is the media relations side, and I think that is where the league has failed more than anything. You know, and not just because it's my job, but the media is equal for the league to help fill the stands and get the butts in the seats. And you know, at the league level, there's one person right now working on PR and media relations, and that person, you know, I'm assuming is just way too busy to do anything, you know, to do anything and to interact and to really do the job properly.
Do just the PR PR portion of it.
You know, have three other jobs as well. You know, I do a, you know, 2.5 hour, 3 hour commercial for the Tampa Bay Storm once a week. We call it the radio broadcast. But it's pretty darn difficult, you know, to get some things done. I need a media guide, I need a set of game notes, and I need a two deep depth chart every week. You give me that stuff, and I'm fine. I take off and I roll. Getting those three pieces of information every week, sometimes is like pulling teeth. And then when you do get them, the information is so bad, you think, you know, on the surface it may sound like, okay, here's one guy, you know, bitching and moaning that, you know, he's not getting, you know, what he needs. But I'm a conduit to the fans. I'm a conduit to try to help sell the league, to sell tickets. People want to know, you know, about some of the guys in this league and their backgrounds and all that stuff. It doesn't allow me to tell those stories. In the AFL in 2008, I had that information and could go into a broadcast prepared. I can tell you, the guys at NFL Network are not happy right now. The guys on the ground, the producers and the talent, aren't happy guys because they're having to go on a national television broadcast for a couple of hours a night. That area of the business absolutely has to get better, without a doubt. And like I said, I give the league a mulligan this year. If it's not better next year, that means they don't care. And that doesn't mean they, you know, year one, it's, man, boy, we made a mistake. We got to get better at this. If they don't get better, that means they don't care. And you know what? That means the NFL Network contract will go away. You'll have local radio broadcasts. Some of the teams don't even have local radio broadcasts. But you'll have Nifty, and that'll be that. And the league will be what it is, you know. But I think that's the biggest area of improvement that the league work on. And it's not a minor area. I mean, it's a good. None of these teams have advertising budgets, or at least significant ones. Their media deals are a good chunk of what they do advertising. And when you don't allow your media people to tell the story,
No, it hurts too, Jason, because you're right, and you're basically, you yourself are selling the league also. You're a 3 hour commercial for the Arena Football League.
Yeah.
So you need to have your information, and I agree. I mean, if anybody who listens to the, you know, watches Nifty and actually listens to some of those stations that actually carry, you can hear the radio station, banter in between breaks. The stuff you hear should be embarrassing to the league. The multitude of times that I have heard somebody say, no, the stats are not working. No, we do not get them printed out. We have to look at the internet to see the stats. And if the stats aren't working that day, as we've seen multitude of many times this year, you are pissing off all media. And as you said, I agree. If they don't get their ass in gear when it comes to the media side, NFL Network is, God forbid they go to some, you know, God forbid they pick up the UFL.
I can just tell you, you know, one of the things about doing a broadcast is you don't have time. When somebody hands you a stat sheet and you're on the air, you don't have time to check their work, you know. And everybody's piling on about the stats program. It is awful. And the one thing I disagree with Male Pig about is, you know what, you're not going to have to eat the contract for the bad stats program. You can tell them, look, you did not deliver what you promised, and here's, you know, stacks and stacks of evidence. Good luck collecting from us. And Daktronix is a big company, and they will say I'm sorry and go away. But that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
But you know, in
Bozier, they will back off.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt they haven't delivered what they want. When you get stats with punt returns on them,
right?
I mean, that's you know, pretty much evidence that they didn't do what they promised. But I was in Bozier the other day when we were playing the Battle Wings. I'm on the air and I'm, you know, handed stats, and I look down and it had Raymond Filial, whatever his stats were, but he had like 23 yards of passing. Well, 2 seconds before, he had just thrown a 37-yard touchdown pass.
My God.
And I, you know, I'm like, guys. You know, and again, I'm not ripping the pro. Everybody knows the program is bad, but there should be a media relations director there that sees those stats before they're handed out to the media, and just says, "Guys, we can't hand this out. These are wrong."
Well, that's
and they never get in my hand.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the problem, though. If you're baiting
your relations guy,
yeah. And there are huge issues being able to print.
And Bozier, the media relations guy, is the in arena announcer. The PA guy.
Oh my God!
So, you know, so he's not, you know, on a game. The media relations guy isn't relating to the media on game day, and this isn't to rip on pay to do, but that's, you know, that's sort of a little microcosm of the problem that I was describing. But again, I'm not a Herculean effort to get the league back, and you know, I think it was important to get markets like Tampa and Arizona back into the mix, because otherwise you just have a renamed. But you know, great effort to get that done. But they get an incomplete and they get a mulligan. And if it's not better next year, then that sort of tells me a little bit about what the future of the league will be.
Myself, I look at everything at it compared to some of the. I try to look at it not necessarily just on an AFL level. I try to look at all the different leagues that I follow and the way that I would want the league to be represented. I'm as far as PR him for Jerry. I'm going to give it, he gets a passing grade for me, and I think. Being there, I mean, he's going to all the games for the NFL Network. Whoever came up with the monkier for the new Arena Football Fridays is fantastic. I mean, I don't think we've ever had something like that within the league itself. So, marketing wise, they probably are getting closer to C minus than anything else because the website itself. You got obviously we don't. We want to talk infinitum about it, but you got the stats program. You have no store. And it seems, yes, that you may have a media director for the league that may seem to be overwhelmed. If she's not, I apologize. Don't get me. It's just the way I feel. It's the way it looks to me. I have spoken to the woman. She is a very nice woman. She's able to answer my question immediately. Some things I wish Jerry could do that I think he gets a failing grade on from me. I can understand his point when it comes to the rule book. That I can understand. But the rule book has been readily available to media since the AFL and the AF2. Us at being an arena fan, we've been able to get a copy of it and use it accordingly. You know, media you know, through the immediate ways that we'll use it. And I'm sure you would like to be able to use it too, Jason, so you'll be able to explain Rule.
I actually saw a 2010 when I showed up on Tim Markham's desk earlier this week, so
no
I know one exists.
Way.
Yeah, and I've gotten one. I didn't get one this year, and I didn't get one in 08 just because I really didn't need one. I've been doing this long enough where I've got it down, but this year it would have been come in handy to have one just because there's a few nuances, but, you know, what made available. So,
yeah. So I'm going to give them a failing grade on that. They need to get a Joe, our esteemed president here at arenafan.com. He has mentioned what he has seen so far as the media guide, the league media guide, and I think I'm basically saying what everybody said too. It's an absolute joke. Jerry has come out and said, you know, that all records are merged. Yet, when you have stats that may not be complete, you want to try to keep track of, you know, if they are all merged, which records? You have scoring records, you have and the like. You know what I'm saying? You need to have something available to you. You know, you can go through. Yeah, yes, you can use ArenaFan. That I understand. But we aren't. We say it all the time. We're not the official stat keeper. We're basing on everything from the league. That goes back to the stats program again, which I don't think we need to do again.
And Sterling, maybe you can weigh in from an AF2. Sorry to interrupt him.
But yeah, go
ahead. Maybe you can weigh in from an AF2 perspective. I think the decision to merge the records is silly. That fell under the bowing to the AF2 owners that are highly involved in the league. But if you're telling the world you're the Arena Football League, then the stats and the records that were earned in the Arena Football League should be the one that counts. You know, it's silly to me.
I agree wholeheartedly.
I agree
wholeheartedly. It should not be combined. It should be able to represent from what AF2 was and what, you know, with AFL. You had Brett Dietz, who broke so many records in the AF2, and there's mm-hmm. You know, it's unfair what he's doing and compare the records. He had the 1 year, I think he had 114 touchdown passes in the AF2. That should not be included. And as far as the stats book and all that, what it is the underlying people who are trying to put a stats book together, and a lot of these kids and their kids. The understaff is, you know, 20 to 25 years of age. You know, they went to, you know, the new high schools, the new math systems, where they're more worried about social science and egg 2 + 2 = 4. And this is why I always get in trouble, because they're not the people, they're nice people, they're nice kids, but they don't understand what it's a stat book. And they just need to redo it. And get somebody a little bit more experienced into the office to help make that happen.
And here's another one as far as the merging of stats that absolutely drives me nuts. When I'm preparing for a game, one of the things I put on my card, my flip chart that I have in front of me, I put the guy's height, the guy's weight, where he went to school, and how many years he's been in the league. Well, guess what? They don't provide us with that last piece of information anymore, at least consistently. Some teams are counting... some teams are not giving us any years of service at all. Some teams are combining AFL and AF2 service. I don't know how long anybody's been in the league anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of those things that's just a little thing that every broadcaster, I don't care what sport, he needs to know how long or not. Has he been in, you know, 3 years? We don't have that information. I've got Orlando's roster in front of me. They just don't provide it. Because it's too confusing, and the guys at NFL Network don't know, you know. So that's just one of those things that it doesn't take much to make a decision to say, all right, only Arena Football League year of service for 10 years, you're Arena Football League rookie, or go the other way.
Oh, no.
If you've played Arena Football, we're counting Arena Football years of service, and if you played an AF2 for 10 years and AF1 for 2 years, then you've got 12 years experience. But no decision was made. So guys like me who have to do the games just kind of go, this one.
Yeah.
Sorry, I digress and I rant. I'm
And you're absolutely right. And hopefully, yeah. And after the season, they're supposed to be reading the whole stat book to get everything up to date and to make it right. I've already been told that. It's going to be up all year for the next 8 weeks, 10 weeks. And there isn't going to be a whole lot that can be done about it, unfortunately.
Basically, we're going to live from game to game like we currently are, and us at Arena Fan are going to continue our grumble. I know it's bad. I know it's bad, because I do this and whatnot, and I do the game books here at Arena Fan, and I used to, guys, I'm sure, see me complain about it way too many times. Is that you know it's bad when you see the poor game books and the poor stat keeping, that you have to go back to Nifty, watch that particular quarter, and get the actual time in which a touchdown was scored.
Yeah, it's a tough deal. And I hope to the fans that are listening, this doesn't sound like just nothing but a bitch session. You know, the overall point that I'm trying to make is you know, by bringing this stuff up, is I'm trying to make it easier for someone to be a fan of the league. And, you know, it's all a progression. The league's got to provide the information. I've got to do a good job of conveying it. And then the fans got to buy in. I want the Arena League to grow not only to where it was in 08 and before that, but beyond. You know, nothing would make me happier. I'm a arena football lifer, been in it for, you know, 10 plus years, and, you know, want to see it grow. But these are some of the things that happen for Arena Fan to be able to do their job, for the fans to be able to go to Arena Fan and check out what happened to a game in a game they didn't see, for me to be able to relay the excitement of a game and maybe tell the story of one of their favorite players. Yeah. All adds up to the end result in growing the league. So I don't want fans to take it as, you know, here's a bunch of guys, you know, complaining about they're not getting, you know, catered to, you know, but the fact of the matter is these are the building blocks to telling the story of an arena football game.
Well, we just don't want to be missing that one particular Lego block, and then the whole thing comes down. You know, we need to have the entire set given to us right out of the box. But, you know, it's true. We're not going to – unfortunately, we've not gotten this. It's not all Jerry's fault at all. And I know we're heading back to what we were talking about before about grading Jerry. You know, overall, I would probably give Jerry a C. Overall, with everything that I've seen, there are a lot of things that I love. I love his interaction. I just can't give the league a mulligan. I'm sorry. I got to give him something tangible that he can. It's like, Jerry, you can improve. You know, we know you're smarter than a fifth grader. Come on. We know you can do exactly what you need to do. You got to get these guys into shape. You don't need another Brett Bushy. You don't need him owning another team. You need to get the other teams into the league. You need to. You are going to be continuously be a league that's going to improve and grow. You're going to, you know, as I say, get back to that point where we're not going to be the fourth or the fifth major league. We're not. We got to get that out of our heads. We're not going to have John Elway. Please God, no John Elways. We don't need any more rules changed the way that they are. I'm ranting here, but either way, I give Jerry a C. I love the way he actually treats the fans. I think that's my biggest thumbs up. So it's overall, mesh things together. It looks like if you put Sterling's together, mine together, and Jason's together, looks like we come out at an incomplete. So after all that.
Well, one other thing.
Like the stats we take care of part of the season, but yeah.
Okay, one thing that I think the league's going to have to spend a little money on is this system of the hometown officiating crews, where one crew is staying in the same city and those fans get to see them 8 times. I don't think is healthy for the growth of the league, and I could probably do a 1-hour monologue on the million reasons why it's not right. But maybe in a situation like Florida, where you've got 3 teams. You have 3 crews, and they rotate between those three. Make them regional crews instead of just one market crews. That may help, but I understand the cost containment side of that. But I think we've seen too many just strange instances this year, and I'm sure the AF2 fans can go on forever about that. But again, that's one of those doing things the AF2 way that I understand the fiscal point of it, but the picture side of things, that probably needs to change in order for the league to grow a little bit.
You're just being so nice there, Jason. I just love the way you put it. We've just seen too many weird things. And you know what? I'm going to say it. Lots of bad calls. Lots of bad calls. I don't have the stats in front of me, so I can't say what the average for total flags called. But I think we all can say that as far as bad calls or missed calls, we can count them on more than just on our two hands. We know there's more than 10, you know, and we're already through half the season. Yeah. It's just bad. Maybe it's cost-cutting.
It's horrendous.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it probably is a cost-cutting thing for year one. Let's hope that they do become a regional referee. It can only get better.
Well, you know, I've been in the league a long time, and even with the rotating crews, it doesn't get that much better.
No, no. You know what? I think you're an arena football fan.
No, it doesn't.
You always seem to complain. What were we going to say, Sterling?
Two things about with the refs and that going on. Number one, the owners refused to pay to travel the referees. It wasn't the office itself. It is the fact that the owners refused. That's number one. And number two, it goes back to something I've been saying for about 3 years, is I know the AFL has this affiliation with the NFL officiating. You know, it's being a training system. But it doesn't work. The referees are trying to train themselves for the NFL and, you know, for the SEC, Big Ten. And they're not focusing enough on AFL rules. And that's another reason I think we're having so many blown calls.
Let me add to that a little bit, Sterling. I'm a high school football official myself, and I know a couple of guys that are on arena football crews, and all of them have aspirations to be in the NFL. I mean, that's the pinnacle when it comes to officiating, mm-hmm. Just as it is with football. Some of the penalties, we have a thing in officiating called preventative officiating. Talk, use your voice before you use your penalty flag. If a guy's lined up offsides, move him back. Tell him, get back before you throw your penalty flag. That cleans up the game. It makes it, you know, not as many flags. These guys are getting reviewed by the NFL every week. The NFL's watching the game tape and sending them back a report on what kind of job they did. These guys are afraid to not call something, because they're afraid they may get dinged in their evaluation from the NFL. These guys want to work for the NFL someday. So you know what? If a guy is a half an inch lined up in the neutral zone, they're going to throw a penalty flag, because if they don't, they're afraid that the report they get back from the National Football League is, boy, you missed a guy lined up in the neutral zone there. You know? And that's where the system is unhealthy. I think probably the best way to administer it is to have a league like the NFL, you know. It's a tough situation for these officials, because it's not a two-way street. It's not like they get the report for the NFL and that says, hey, you missed a lined up in the neutral zone call, and they can try to get back, and really it didn't affect the play. What advantage did he gain by having his toenail in the neutral zone on that flag, on that play? So, yeah, I didn't throw a flag.
Nice.
You know? So that's where the system gets unhealthy, is, all right, if I've got to throw the flag, because if I don't, you know, it'll be a block. And that's to the detriment of fans of the AFL. You know, officiating, you know, one of the first things they teach you is, okay, you saw a foul. What advantage was gained by that foul? If the guy was holding on the left side of the line and the play was to the right, do you throw a flag for holding? No, because no advantage was gained. He doesn't live out and play out in the AFL too much, because those guys live in fear a little bit of getting a bad report from the National Football League.
Sounds like a very bad charitable organization. Who do you work for? I work for Fear Mongering for Flags.
Yeah, right.
I do. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. That's cool, Jason. That, so it gives it a whole other side. You are a referee, but you don't play one on the radio, right?
Well, actually, I trot it out every once in a while.
Okay.
But, and I should say this in defense of the referees, anybody that's ever, I've gotten out on the practice field and kind of, stood in like the umpire's position, or anybody that's ever officiated this game will tell you it's one of the hardest that there is to officiate. It just moves so fast with so many guys in such a confined area that it's extremely difficult. So I will say that it's extremely tough, the job that those guys do, but I don't think the system allows them to use their judgment and control the game as they could in some of the outdoor games.
Sterling, chime in.
Oh, no, I understand completely what he's saying there. And that's what I'm saying, almost to the point of where, if we break from the NFL's, and they're reviewing, they just use a straight AFL review, that we'll probably get a better route and a better play calling when it comes to different penalties. And, Jacksonville with the 18,000 times where the fan interferes in the game.
Don't get me started. Started on that one.
It worked against us, trust me.
So that's why I still would like to see a break from it, but
it's, I guess it's funny, in all the years that I've been an arena football fan, and I'm sure same thing with you, Sterling, same thing with you, Jason, we've all mumbled on sides, obviously, Jason, but it's like we've always complained about referees. It's just like we're adding different things on to it, and it's refereeing, I don't think, is ever going to get any better. I mean, you can easily spot, when you watch an NFL game, usually you can spot a referee, even though he's at the pinnacle where he should be. He's at the show. He's refereeing in some form or another, an NFL game. You know. But at least the thing, one thing I have noticed is that the referees this year, they talk more. Before, if there is a call that they really needed to really go over, they'll talk about. But there have been too many blown calls. I mean, and you bring up the I rambled on about it last for the podcast, for the AFL Tonight podcast about the Ferentz thing. I could have sworn the rules are a lot more stringent in years past when it came to fan interference. And I'm just going to reiterate what JP said. It's all about safety. You need to be able to do something, whether you're drawing at people or not. That's something that they just have to look at again. So it's, if they've missed a call, they've missed a call. There's nothing we can really do about it. If it costs you a game, well, then there's an issue. I would hope that the league would say something about it, but we've noticed that right now they're keeping everything internal. So,
well, the teams get a letter on Wednesday or Thursday that says, "Whoops, sorry about that," and that's the extent of it.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah, so that won't be the case where it comes down, is it, where a team loses because of one particular call.
Yeah, and Sterling, maybe you can answer this. In the playoffs, do they hold true to that hometown officiating crew? In other words, if Tulsa's hosting a playoff game, or the Arena Bowl for that matter, is Tulsa's officiating crew going to be there? Or do they, for the playoffs, do they bring in quote-unquote foreign officiating crews?
What they do, and like I said, this is based on the AFC in the past, and it's probably going to be the same with the refs, is they go through the review tapes, find out who's done a good job and who's done a suck job, and they bring in the ones who are going to do the good job.
All right, so they do overall. They do import crews for the playoffs.
Which would make sense, actually. Which would make sense. I just wonder how they got it wrong so those few years ago. In Philadelphia, we won't go there.
Yeah.
We won't go there.
That was a leak setup. We all know that.
I'm biting my tongue right now. it's interesting.
I will tell you though, last year in the AF2 in the playoff game with Tulsa and Spokane, that three of the referees. And because they did such a poor job officiating, one is they're not in the league this year. Number two, they were told they will not be doing the championship game.
Well, that's
so the reviewing is not just for the whole season; it's week by week. during the playoffs.
That's the way it should be.
Well, I know of one official this year that was given the gate after not performing well, too. So they're certainly trying to clean up the ones that make the egregious errors, I'll tell you that.
Nice. That's good. No, that sounds very promising. That's actually good now if we can just control the rest of the refs. So. I'm sure you yourself would want to be able to just yell. I know you're on the radio. Sometimes it may just kill you not being able to say something. You know, you have to.
And we say it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
No, we say there's been some you just can't explain. You know, so you have to. I mean, and that's, we're a conduit to the fans. We have to call it like we see it. Of course, we get accused of railing on the refs too much. So. You know, you got to walk that line.
The league doesn't have a fine for radio guys, do they?
I'm sorry, you broke up?
Yeah, as far as I know, the league does not have a fine for radio guys, do they?
I've been in it, you know, 11 years and haven't got one yet, and I'm sure if there was one, I probably would have earned it by now.
Nice. It's funny, you took over the media relations part. I don't know. We're going to go head over to the final segment of the show. We're going to head over to the free-for-all. I know you've touched in it a lot about media relations in the league itself, Jason. I can give it to you again, and you can start from there if you want. But one thing that was very, very interesting that Sterling mentioned before we started taping tonight, we may have a little bit more news about possible freshman teams for 2011, besides the teams that we already know about. What have you heard, Sterling?
Okay, here's now. This was as of yesterday, so we know this is always going to be a fluid situation. Right now, it's going to be at least minimum 5 teams, and then possibly 6. I mean, yes, we've talked about San Jose, Philadelphia minus Bon Jovi. It will be the two others. And no John Bon Jovi. Pittsburgh, Denver, Kansas City. Was that 5? And then LA as well. Now, 5 of those 6 have already signed contracts, and they're trying to finish up the 6th one. And the 6th one now, they're saying, is actually going to be the Vigilantes is going to be going to Kansas City, take over the Brigade, and JJ is coming back through his son and is going to be running the Desperados.
So what would be the point of Kern trying to start up the whole new Vigilantes brand and stuff like that when JJ's just going to come in and just rebrand them again?
Well, what happened was that JJ wanted to join the league, but then the current owner in Dallas was saying, well, they already have an ownership group in Dallas. So what it's going to be is that the franchise fee from Dallas is going to help set up the Kansas City Brigade again.
Oh.
You know, with financial help with the field and all that.
Multiple fields.
So that's where that part is. I mean, it's just like the misnomer about the 6.1.
6.1 million?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a whole misnomer that the league is $6.1 million dip. And that's not true. I mean, the owners have taken care of that fee already.
Interesting.
And some of the owners who help pay a little bit more are going to get some of their franchise money back from the franchise fee is going to be $3 million. Is where it's been at. So it's going to be those owners who paid a little bit more to help out the $6.1 million are going to get a bigger, higher return on their money.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know,
but yeah, so that's what's going on right now is that
trust
Dallas
me,
is
anything
in Kansas City.
Huh. We're saying, Jason.
Yeah, what I was going to say, I'm surprised, and nothing surprises me in the AFL, but I would be surprised that Woody Kern would run a team in Kansas City. He's a Texas guy. I think if he was going to run a team, you know, not in Texas, he'd, you know, run the Storm. You know, but again, nothing surprises me, and I haven't talked to Woody, but, you know, that would be a little bit of a departure from you know, at least where I thought Woody's head was on the matter.
Teams, and I didn't
think supposedly the fact is he's getting paid to move the team to Kansas City.
Oh wow! God, what is? It sounds like we're starting with the LA Wings situation all over again.
And one thing that doesn't address is, will we lose any team, too? You know, that's one thing you got to think about as well.
That's a good question. Yeah. No, that's a good question.
I'm hearing... One team I'm hearing more than anybody else is Oklahoma City. That their attendance is down, they're not getting enough money in, and that they're going to be gone. That's the one team I'm hearing that's gone.
They hurt.
Unless they act together.
You have a natural... Yeah, you got a natural rivalry with Oklahoma City and Tulsa.
Oh, absolutely, it would hurt it. But then Tulsa can get their little thing going on with Dallas and Kansas City in between because it's not that far of a distance for either one.
That's true.
And Utah is one that.
Plus, you
got to
remember Oklahoma City
and
now has the Thunder,
rumbling.
So the fans are putting their money into the game.
And what are we saying about Utah, Jason?
I was saying Utah is probably one to keep an eye on, too, unless, and I've heard rumblings that there may be an ownership change there, but that's a franchise that's certainly struggling. Yeah.
They need to move back. Unfortunately, they got to move back to the, not the E-Center. Where were they? Energy Solution Center or whatever it was called.
It was the Delta Center. Is it the Delta Center? They changed that building's changed name a ton of times.
Yeah. Nothing would surprise me. I mean, they came in last. They've shown some spark. I mean, they do have, but whatever. You know, we'll see what happens at the end of the year. The table's yours, Jason. Free for all.
I railed about the media, but I think you'd find this humorous. We played Bossier City a couple of weeks ago, and you know, let's say Raymond Filial was having a great game, and I turned to the Bossier City Battle Wings media guide to find out maybe if he was on a record pace or was about to break some sort of franchise. About Raymond Filial from the Bossier City Battle Wings media guide. His favorite food is pizza, his favorite TV show is CSI, and his favorite song to sing in the shower is Addicted to Money. Not a word about what Raymond Filial's done, what he did in Kansas City. but that's what I got out of the Raymond Filial page of the Bossier City Battle Wings media guide.
Well, so. Thank God his favorite song to sing in the shower wasn't It's Raining Men.
Right. Hey, one other thing, we talked about rules. Well, one of the things that drives me nuts. We talked about rules. One of the things that drives me nuts is the onside kick. Not the kick itself. I love it. I love that they do it in arena football. It's exciting, but what drives me nuts is that it's legal for the receiving team to just play Karch Kirks into this. That isn't football to me, so I have proposed a rule change for onside kicks inside the last minute. If the receiving team bats it into the stands, instead of a yardage penalty, which there is a yardage penalty for doing that, but because of the situation in the game, rarely would want a yardage penalty. If they're onside kicking, that means they want the receiving team to have a short field because they're taking up less time to score or get the ball back or whatever. They don't want to back the receiving team up 5 yards for illegal batting. I am proposing that if the receiving team does not attempt to field the onside kick, add 5 seconds onto the clock, thus penalizing the receiving team what amounts to an extra play when in terms of them running out the clock late in a game or in a half.
Interesting rule. I like that. I kind of like that. It's true. We've been seeing batting.
I like that. All
right, and that's all I have to say.
You know what?
One other thing. Sorry, Tim.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Talking to each other over the internet thing's a little difficult. One other thing I do want to say, maybe complaining a lot. One I do want to say is the players in the Arena Football League. You cannot find a greater group of guys, nicer, do anything for the fans, do anything for the press. They're not making a lot of money. They're out there doing or playing arena football because they love it. Same for the coaches, the coaching staff, and the front office. All those people are doing it. The players and staff in the Arena Football League, top notch all the way. Couldn't find a greater group of guys and gals.
Yeah, that's perfect. I don't know. I wouldn't know what else to say. I mean, I don't know. It's true. I don't know how some of these groups do it. The Bossier Group is a grand total of four people as their front office staff. So I'm like, how do you do this? So I guess they are, you know, they do what they can. I agree with you there. I'm trying to think of something that I would be able to bring up for the free for all myself, but it's with all honesty, I thought I had something, and I think I've exhausted myself. I'm actually speechless, so I don't know.
I can tell you what Raymond Filial likes to do before a game. According to the media guide, he likes to sleep.
Nice. Okay.
Well, I've actually been to the Bossier office. The Battle Wing office, and there's two things about it when I was there a couple of years ago, and this might make more sense with it all, is number one, like I said, it's only four people. You have one person running everything and three salespeople. And when I was in their office, and it's an old dilapidated building with six platoons inside the building and four freezers. It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, they're nicest people in the world.
What did they do? Freeze their spit?
I was afraid to look at the first.
Spittoons.
This is what their office
and
is.
And by the way,
it's
I'm not piling on both.
It's weird.
No, I know you're not, Jason. And I know you're not piling them on, Jason. Yeah. And that's true, Sterling. That's just a little odd. I knew they were dipped, but... Anyways,
spittoons. My favorite part about the Battle Wings is that their owner, Dan Newman, does their radio for the team's road games.
Yes.
Which is great. How often do you hear the owner do the radio? That's awesome.
I've actually seen his halftime shows that he does on Nifty.
Yes, he does a good job.
And we've actually had Henry Primo's dad, Henry Primo, he actually has done some color commentary also. You know, so him being the owner of the Talons, I mean, it's only in the Arena Football League. It's true, only in the Arena Football League. I will admit, I am.
And what's most fun about Primo, by the way, is whenever he gets on the radio, he always gets at least a $500 fine by the league because he's always saying something to piss off Jerry.
Oh,
and one time he got a $2,000 fine.
Wow.
And the incident because of that was because
an arena fan
in Arkansas came after him with a cane and tried to beat him up.
Wow.
Tim, arena fan has agreed to pay for any fines that I get for anything I said on this show, correct?
Oh, no. As I do with JP, it's always, by Jason Dixon are solely those comments of Jason Dixon and not a part of what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I know what you get.
Yeah.
I'll talk to Joe. I'll talk to Joe at the next one. Yeah.
Joe, I'm sorry. I just ate into your advertising budget. What are you talking about?
I hope a lot of people listen to the podcast.
They do.
It cost you some money.
Oh, you'd be surprised. I'm actually quite happy with the amount of people that listen to the podcast. So it's good.
Good.
If nobody can think of anything else, I can't think of anything else for the free for all. I'm actually speechless. There's nothing other than I think we've actually exhausted everything that we came here to do this month. And Sterling,
I can think.
Go ahead, Jason.
I can think of one thing. What, your co-host on the podcast every week,
Mr. JP Worley.
Yeah. I was listening this morning. to the podcast, and you were going through the week's matchups, and he got to the War on I-4, and he kind of poo-pooed the War on I-4. One different player. Well, of course they're different players. They've been playing the game for 20 years. There's going to be different players. And then he got to the Cleveland-Chicago matchup, and he acted like a little schoolgirl. It's like Cleveland and Chicago get you excited, but the War on freaking I-4 is different players. Well, who does he think's playing any of the in the Cleveland-Chicago game? Boy. That just for you don't poo-poo the War on I-4 where I'm from, pal.
All right, Sterling, your turn. Go after JP.
No, you don't. Yeah. No, I love the War on I-4. There's so much fun. You get the players flipping you off and everything else. When you start singing to the random players, it's a small world after all. Drives them up the wall.
I love it. I will admit I've not been to a game in Orlando. I haven't been able to catch. I've not been to a game in Tampa. You know, the few places that I've been to have been. But I think it's about time that I. You know, with the way that things are going, who knows where Arena Bowl is going to end up this year? So, it could be. It could be Jacksonville. It could be Spokane. It could be Orlando. It could be Could be almost anywhere. So it could be Tulsa. Sorry, yeah, it could be Tulsa. So it's something that we'll have to see farther down the line. But it's just quickly. Last word. Anything? I know you got your. I know you wanted to clear the air, and I'm glad you did, Jason. I'll send you my bill.
I would rather see Chicago, Cleveland over Tampa Bay, Orlando. Come on. Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. No. I'm pumped for the water.
It's JP,
Any last tidbits, Sterling?
Two quick things. First of all, I think it needs to be clarified. Arena fan, AFL fan zone, or AFL fan zone now. I'm so bad, so do that. First of all, we are here to compliment each other as well as compliment the league. I know people try to, do a dividing line between us. It's like, and get over it. We're here to both help this league in any way feasible and any way possible.
And that's true.
That's the first thing I want to get off real quick. And second of all, as the AFL fans, as we all merge together, AF2 fans and AFL fans, is we are going to end up being a nice, strong brotherhood of fans for the common cause. That's all I had.
There is no AF2 fans. There were AF2 fans. There were former, we'll call it the former AFL fans. Right now, we are all arena football fans. Point blank. Point blank. And I agree with that. I think that's the perfect way to end this week's broadcast, Sterling. Fantastic. Again, I want to thank everybody for joining us as you do every month, and same thing with on all the other podcasts. We will be back for our June edition. Don't know who we're going to have yet for our esteemed colleagues joining us at the round table. But first, I want to thank you, Jason, for joining us. I know you were very busy getting ready for this week's game. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to join us.
No problem. And again, thanks to Arena Fan. You guys are a great resource. I love reading the message boards. I love all the articles and everything. So thank you guys for what you do. We certainly appreciate it.
And Sterling, I've listened to you before on the previous AF2 show that you were doing. The first time I've actually spoken with you personally. I think you get a bum rap, my friend. I really do. You seem to be a very nice guy, and I want to thank you for joining us also. And obviously, I hope to have one or both of you back with us sometime down the line.
Yeah, don't count on that, Tim.
You just let me know when. What? Except for have JP on next time, because JP was a coward for not showing up tonight because he is afraid of me.
Actually, I can honestly say with 100% certainty, I know that he was actually working tonight. But we'll leave it at that. So, for everybody here at Arena Fan and at the AFL Roundtable, I'm Tim Capper for Jason Dixon and for Sterling Jackson. Thanks for listening to us. We'll see you next month. Bye-bye.